All right, Jim Taylor back on WRMJ and WRMJ.com on this Saturday morning, the WRMJ Sports Line. I tell you, it's great to have really one of the gold standards in Quad City area media with us this morning, Dan Pearson. Good morning, sir. I know this is a guy that we look up to a lot because I don't know if you have the secret of life, but I know you enjoy what you do.
Right.
And if people want to get in this business, you have to enjoy what you really do.
You do. And the people around you have to, your spouse and your family and stuff, to understand that it's a different life, isn't it? You know, that you just got to roll a little bit differently.
You grew up in Geneseo, right?
That's right.
So a little
bit
about your background for those people that don't know. And I know you are proud of being a Geneseo alum, and I know a lot of the things you've covered over the years gives you great happiness, too, out that way.
Right. I grew up there. I have five brothers, and growing up there was great. My cousin was one of my... one of my heroes. He played for the Steelers, and he was actually the other wide receiver in the Immaculate Reception, you know, so I always thought that was...
Now, who's that?
Barry Pearson is his name.
Wow.
So he played on those teams that started a 52-game unbeaten streak, and he was an All-Stater, and a guy lined up next to him was an All-American, and I don't know if he even caught one pass in high school, so they never had to throw it, and then he ends up on a scholarship at Northwestern, leads the Big Ten in receiving. You know, a kid who never probably caught a pass in high school, and he ends up in the most famous pass play ever, you know.
And then he played at Geneseo High School? Or no?
Yeah. He was like, he's like 11 or 12 years older than me, so that was quite an advantage to have going through youth.
So he would have played for who, Reedy, or who was the coach at Geneseo back in the
Bob Reed, yeah. That would be in Bob's first couple years. You know, he was there about 20 years, I think. And, you know, it's fun. I'm on help out with the Hall of Fame committee, and, you know, Barry was one of them. And just to hear him talk how, you know, when he came back for it, you know, it's more like the relationship with coaches has evolved into we're kind of just friends now. He said, hey, you can't make me run anymore, you know.
So you grew up in Geneseo, went to then Bradley University, right? Now, where did you meet your wife at?
She's actually from Geneseo, too. We worked in this wonderful grocery store. All the cool kids worked in the meat department, like me, and she was the bakery girl, and all that, and so we met there, and she ended up going to Bradley, too, and then both of our daughters went there. They met their husbands there. A couple of my brothers went there, too, so it's a really important place to us, and, you know, we still follow it, and it's been cool to see, like, just the changes that have happened there. Even with athletics, it's just beyond belief what they've done with the facilities. Now I'm ready for them to start winning some more games.
but as Mom always says, young man, you ain't gonna find your wife at a bar. You're gonna find her at the grocery store.
That's right, exactly.
And that gives you, I mean, that's a great small market, you know, small town story.
Absolutely, yeah. And there's just like
match made in heaven, man.
Yeah, you know, and it was just that I looked for that. That's kind of been.
So you knew at the time that this is the one.
She knew at the time. She said, she tells me, because I was I was a knucklehead probably at that point in my life, and I'm sure her parents were like, no, this isn't the one. But yeah, you know, it didn't take long before we both knew that this was it. I mean, we started just talking about planning our lives together, and at that point in my life, you know, I didn't think I would ever be on TV. But, you know, as I went through college and we were dating and stuff, I started to get my confidence, and I had a really great mentor at Channel 25 in Peoria. Not Lee Hall, our mutual friend, but we interned together, actually. But a guy named Les Shapiro, and he helped draw confidence out of me. And then it got to the point, like, do I really want to get married? Do I really ever want to have children? Because, hey, man, I'm going to be at ESPN someday. Mm-hmm. And then I think about, you know, just what God did, you know, by having an incredible wife, you know, without that support, none of this would have ever happened to me, you know, and just how she understood, you know, just what the pattern of life is when you're in the media, too. So, I mean, God had a plan through it all, and I'm just really grateful, you know, and now, you know, having been out of it for almost 6 years now, but I still have my toe in the water, you know.
Yeah,
and
that's,
stories
that's,
and stuff.
Yeah, that's a question.
Yeah.
And that's, for me personally and professionally, to do it, you know, you have to have buy-in from your... Mm-hmm. Loved ones,
right?
You know, your wife. You know, I'm fortunate; my wife has buy into this, mm-hmm. and my four kids. That this has been kind of their life. That
mm-hmm. yes.
Dad does this, and you know, I've seen you now with your Fellowship of Christian Athletes. I think one of the great scenes that I see sometimes behind the scenes is, you know, I see your wife at some of the games with you now. She's kind of the co-producer where you're filming, mm-hmm. and she's got the legal pad or whatever taking notes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's a great picture, Pearson. I mean, that's buy-in, and that's mm-hmm. as they say, that's true unconditional. Mm-hmm. Love.
Very
much
so.
You have to travel to Manly, Illinois to shoot the Piro Valley Riverdale game.
Yeah, and it's funny because we've gone full circle because, you know, when I was interning and when I was in college, she'd go with me. You know, it's like, well, that's the only way we're going to spend time. So we'd call that date night, and now we call it date night again, you know. So, but it's great, and it's funny because...
And I'll get dinner. It's the Orient Thanksgiving Tournament hospitality room.
That's right. I'll sneak a plate out, you know. So yeah. She's really not media, but, you know.
And if you go to the concession stand, don't buy a pop there because they have it in the hospitality room.
And you get one to go, too. Yeah. So you bring your Polar Pop cup with you. Yeah. Yeah. Save 79 cents.
That's the life, though, that... She understands
very much,
and
so.
even myself, you kind of take it for granted a little bit mm-hmm. that they are so accepting of it,
right? You know, and that when you have someone like that who embraces your passion, whether it's broadcasting or whatever it might be, you know, that's part of what marriage is. And it's funny because my daughter, you know, both of my daughters grew up with that, and they really understood it. My wife really helped me succeed as a dad. To like bring the kids where I was and stuff like that. They'd come to the station every Saturday night, you know, and bring me the we'd all have the double cheeseburger special from Rookies up on North Brady, and they'd bring it in, and which is, explains my cholesterol problem right now. But then, you know, my daughter Amanda, she married a guy, you know, that ended up being a sports director at WCIA in
Champaign.
Yeah,
his name for our listing audience.
Matt Wetterston is his name. And very talented guy, so she knew what she was getting into as well. So she was really at peace when she married Matt. And you know, like I said before, we were talking off air. Like Matt and I, we had that connection, and so it was kind of an irony because we both knew how challenging that job was, but we had that connection, and it really has created a good relationship from you know father-in-law to son-in-law. So that's been cool.
And you're like, hey. You need to do it this way.
Exactly.
I can't imagine you ever doing that. How when you've had to, your daughters, did they play sports then?
Yeah, they were both three sporters, and now they've kind of evolved.
Now how kind of, you know, being from Geneseo where you lived, and then they played there. Mm-hmm. So how kind of difficult or challenging is it, do you think, like covering events where your kids are involved? And I tell everybody, and I've talked about this ad nauseum, that for me, when people say, well, what's the most enjoyable part of your mm-hmm. career? Well, it's broadcasting my kids' games
that
they played in. But then I look back to and I say, you know, is your coverage of them fair? Are you trying to tone it back a little bit? Because everybody knows out there, that's Taylor's kid. Sure, he's going to say something nice about his kid. But then you sit, I remember... You know, when Ty was playing one time, he knocked down six threes in one half. And I'm like, did I go crazy enough that he hit six threes in the first half? You know, and so sometimes are you giving them enough credit at times, or are you giving them too much
mm-hmm. well,
credit?
Well, to your credit, you go crazy if Joey Thompson hits six threes.
Not the referee, Joey Thompson.
That's his grandson. But, but for me, it was like I probably – went the other way, you know, and like our daughter Katie, she went to state in both pole vaulting and tennis, and like every year they'd have this Tuesday workout for all the kids from every school would get together and practice tennis, the state-bound kids, and like I didn't even include her name in the thing, and then Tom Cornella said, Pierce, come on, you know, so he added her name to it, you know, so like they never got to be on or anything like that, but at the end of their high school experience, you know, we did these things called personalities. The night they graduated, you know, I had saved video and stuff and used it from like even when they were kindergartners mm-hmm. and took them through their life. And so we did a personality when they graduated. And so that kind of served me well because I didn't want to overdo it. And there's 110 high schools in the area. And those people had high appreciation for that because they saw a piece of our family, you know, and that sport was indeed a mm-hmm. pretty big deal at our house. So,
well, I know family and faith are very important to you, so that goes without saying. But,
right.
but give me something else that what really makes Dan Pearson tick. I know, mm-hmm. you know, as I said, faith and family, we know that. But what are some of the other things you really enjoy? Bradley Brave fan, right? A graduate,
yep.
St. Louis Cardinal baseball. I know that.
Yeah,
right?
all
so,
that.
So, okay, so what else makes you tick?
Mm-hmm. I guess like sport-wise, like playing tennis, playing baseball was always a big deal to me. And just watching relationships, you know, like in FCA, you know, we value the coach. That's my number one. I have to serve the coach first because they're the influencers. And so to see those moments, you know, I get great thrill out of that. And, like, I don't play golf because I've never had time to play golf. And so, like, my wife always says, your golf is video. You know, your golf is capturing moments and putting together a music piece that's going to run at somebody's banquet, you know. And so I would say that, you know, that's
your old fishbowl.
Exactly. That's it. And so it's really important to me to be able to celebrate that in a way and excuse myself from having a part in it. Like, there's times I'm like, I don't need to be in this video. And that was like one of the hard parts, especially after I became a Christian, was like, it's not about me, you know. And so that's something that I've always been pretty moved to do, to say, you know what, create something that they, it's like being a good referee, that at the end of the day, if they didn't notice you there, you know, you've probably done a really good job, or it's, nobody's complaining about you. And that's something that was always a big deal to me. Like, I would save all this video and hide all these raw tapes so nobody would use them, you know. And then at the end of the season, I'd put something together. I got a lot of pleasure from that.
So that's your, I mean, that's like one of the things.
Absolutely.
That's your motivation.
Yeah.
And for me, I like cutting up highlights here.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Sending them to people to say, hey, enjoy this, mm-hmm. or whatever.
Well,
and
now,
relive this.
Yeah,
memory.
And you get to the point where now, you know, some of those kids that we had videos of, they're calling me, hey, can I actually get that on a DVD now? Because I spilled coffee on the VHS
only got beta.
Yeah, and so that's fun because I know that they're popping those videos in to show their children. It's like, and then their kids, man, Dad, you were pretty good, you know?
Do you like miss the chase at all of like Monday to Friday or Saturday or whatever? There's really no set hours in that type
right.
of business. Do you miss some of that? Because I know you still are, you say you have your toe in the water a little bit with your Fellowship of Christian Athletes. You produce some stuff for Channel 8. I know. So you're still around it. And you like
yeah.
it. But do you miss, like, the everyday chase at times?
Not as much as I thought I would, you know, because, I mean, like, I think I got it out of my system. And just the thought of doing it again, man, it's just go, go, go. And, like, I mean, I still knock out a ton of hours. Probably it rivals what I did before. I mean, it was always a 70-hour work week. But, like, the hard part was, like, on Saturday, like, on a Friday during football or basketball season, you belt out 12, 13-hour day. You get out of there at 1 in the morning. Then you're back at a cross-country meet at 8:30 in the morning in Pleasant Valley. You go through your day, hit about 8 stops. You put it together, and then when 10:20 rolls around, you know, it's like, I got 4 minutes of pretty good stuff. But the people don't care that you were there at 8:30 in the morning, you know. So you have to present it in a way that is it's a pleasure, and that they don't even think, well, that was at 8. He must have this team of 50 people helping him out.
Me.
So you have to, you just have to have a great attitude. And that's, I don't care what business it is. Like you said, if you have a passion for it, you're going to find a way to get it done. And the thought of doing that probably is not as appealing. I mean, I could do it, but now, you know, I have 4 grandchildren now, so I'm trying to find ways to get in front of them and impact them,
yeah.
too.
Well, and I guess the other thing, and this is for me not being on the TV side of it, but kind of the inner struggle at guys that do sports on TV, mm-hmm. local markets, you know, for me, of the frustration of, and what do you get, 4 minutes? Or I'm not sure, like 4 minutes, 5 minutes, or 5 minutes. 5 minutes is like that. Like,
on a Saturday night, you get that much.
Okay.
You know, usually it's about 3 minutes.
So the inner struggle of knowing that you can't have all this on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And then you know, especially, and I struggle with that here with just covering the small amount of number of schools that we cover. Like, I'm not giving due coverage to this,
or right.
I'm not giving due coverage to that. Well, because it's one person or whatever, and you have so much time in a day,
mm-hmm.
and so much time to present
yeah.
on
mm-hmm.
On the air. But then, you know, I look at the TV guys in the Quad City market and all the schools and student athletes that they cover,
mm-hmm.
and they have to be thinking sometimes, darn it, why didn't I get that,
yeah.
or why can't I cover that? Or, I mean, is that a serious inner struggle, you think?
Absolutely. I that really bothered me. There were, I'd have sleepless nights. You know, if somebody, you know, you'd knock out 24 games on a Friday night, and then sure enough, the grandma from Wilton calls her the uncle from DeWitt, and it's like
saying, Pearson, you hate the Wilton Beavers, you man. Like you us. Hate the Wilton Beavers.
Exactly.
And so, you're like, you right.
But you get to the point where it's like, even like in ministry, I had a really just a brilliant guy who kind of had a heads up on me, like over, like, you know, I probably put in too many hours and stuff. And he told me, and I think it applies to broadcasting, is ministry is impossible. So don't do the impossible, yeah. You know, and you gotta get over it, you know. And like, for me personally, like as I would do stories and as I continue to do stories, like if I do a story on the St. Ambrose bowling team or something like that, my job is to celebrate it, but maybe create the desire for anybody who views it to go to their website and get more information. And
yeah.
You know, so we just open the door, make two or three really important points about it, and make them feel good about themselves and understand that TV and radio and newspapers and what the internet has become are all completely different and good things together, too.
Yeah. And I tell people, too, imitation is the purest form of flattery.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, me growing up in the Quad Cities, you know, I thought one of the great things that you created is the captured the Highlight Zone
right.
brand. Mm-hmm. And now everybody tries to do it. So mm-hmm. I say imitation, purest form of flattery. Do you see that in some of the other presentations where you're like at home telling your wife, fist pump, yeah, that's me.
I've seen that. Yeah. But it was kind of funny.
But I know you're not that guy to toot your own home.
Right. But I'm happy for them.
Yeah.
Obviously.
I think that allows other stations to say, hey, we're missing the boat and we need to do something like this.
So you think of like the influence that you've had on people that are important to you, you know, like Dazzo and Cuff, and we call him Greca because his wife's name is Becca, so you combine Greg and now all of the stations, you know, and to get phone calls from people that are asking for advice on how can I do this. Like Joey Donny is a great guy, and he's like, he came in and he had to replace Tom Cornelis, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, well, good luck with that one, you know. So, but to have that, see that influence and work, and for them to create their own brand and to evolve and stuff. And like when it first started, you know, I had somebody at the station after like two or three weeks say, I think this has run its course. You got to quit having Paula Sands read the highlights. And then, I mean, within a week, this shoe company out of Milwaukee said, hey, we'll pay you $80,000 to put our name on the bottom. So, boom.
We're going to bring Paula Sands back to read the highlights.
Exactly. Right. So, in fact, she's going to read two.
So that was your fist.
That was the affirmation right there, man. Move on. Okay, let's go forward with it.
So when you look back at the Highlight Zone of missing the chase when I asked you, do you miss a little bit of that on Friday night? Because I try to figure out the score WQAD does, all the stuff they do. Mm-hmm. And then when you did it, I'm like, well, how are they getting from Biggsville over to Manlius or wherever, you know? I mean, it's amazing that, you know, you don't realize how big this area is until you have to cover high school football mm-hmm. games on Friday nights.
Yeah, and I mean, we had to have meetings about it, and the energy required, and it just gets you juiced, man. I mean, it's similar to playing sports, I would say, that you find a way to get it done, and then you adjust if something crazy happens, flat tire or whatever. And then, like when I was working at the station, like if somebody would stay probably a little bit too later just to beat the other stations, they called that Pearsonitis, because I was very guilty of that, because there's times I'd be rolling in at 4 or 5 after 10 o'clock, and it's like I'm anchoring the show in 10 minutes. And, you know, so that part was really fun. And then to go out back then, you know, it was tapes, it wasn't digital, to run out onto that set when somebody said there are six tapes missing, six games are missing. And so, you know, we're floating stuff, and then to see it all come together, and like, I had this team of ladies at my church. I got them all Highlight Zone hats and stuff. And when I said, when like we're at about 10:14 or whatever, coming up is the Highlight Zone, they'd start praying. And I was like, I'm not kidding you. And I really think it worked.
Divine intervention.
And so to have that, like, you know, to have a bunch of ladies at my church have ownership and stuff. So it was really a community thing. And I always thought that somebody at home is watching, you know, and so, you know, there were like our guy said, there was probably 110,000 people on Friday nights, especially watching, you know, and I wanted to give them their moment, because this might be one of the biggest moments of their life, at least the most visible moments. We wanted to do it with excellence and fun, and something that they can pop in for the next 35 Thanksgivings. Remember back in 92, you know, when I had a 12-yard touchdown run that made the air, and he mispronounced my name?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the other thing people forget about when you got to cover all those schools, and then you're doing all the highlights as well. But those have to be, you know, some of the most glorious moments for you, though, when you reflect back on those times doing that Friday night show.
Absolutely, and it was, you know, and that's just like the thing was, like, we always made sure it was about the kids and about the coaches, and that's kind of, there's a symmetry to that with what I'm doing now with FCA, and like we. Like when I first started, I worked in Peoria and Springfield, and in Springfield one time, they didn't want to do the highlight zone or anything, and they didn't want to commit that kind of body, those bodies. But like one time when I was there, it was Griffin, Springfield Griffin, not Sacred Heart Griffin. When I was only there about a year, and I said, hey, and I'm a super young kid, I'm going to predict that Griffin is going to win the state baseball championship. At the first game of the regional, they are down. They're down two runs, and a guy at Springfield Southeast High School, lazy fly ball, two outs in the seventh inning. He drops it, and the kid circles the bases. That tied it, and then they won it in extra innings. And they do go on to win the state championship. But all along, I'm like showing Bosach, the voiceovers with sound on tape. Just think, you know, if this kid wouldn't have dropped the ball, and then like after showing that four or five times, his dad called and said, hey, do you mind? You know, so that gave me an awareness of, like, people really are watching, and that could really tear a kid apart. And so now it's not who threw the interception, it's who made the interception. So the negative part is, like, they don't necessarily ask to be on TV, and they definitely don't ask to be called out on Monday morning. Hey, I saw you throw an interception in front of 110,000 people. You know, so I probably maybe was overly sensitive to that, but at the same token, I'm glad that we really had, you know, it's great in Philippians 2, it talks about being, consider others better than yourselves, you know. And so that's something that's really important to me, and that's something that I try to live by, too. And, you know, and that includes, you know, being on TV, and that includes being a husband, being a father, and being a grandfather, that, you know, we're called to live in a certain way. And just because it might make you look pretty cool because you're the guy on TV, you know, you need to have humility. And you need to understand that this is a great gift to have this kind of platform, too.
You know, you bring up a good point. Have you ever had to, you know, apologize to anyone for anything you've ever... I mean, I'm talking about media-wise. Mm-hmm. Have you ever had to apologize?
When I first started, and I had to apologize. I can't even remember if I did it on the air, but...
Because I got a story, too.
My gosh. When it was 1984, and this is when... it was the ABC affiliate in Peoria, and they were down a sports guy, and I wasn't ready to be on the air, but they had me do it once a week so the other guy would have a day off at least. And it was the Indy 500, and we did these teases, you know, and it's like I'm running like an idiot, doing things. And I'm, hey, you need to cut a tease first before, because I was going to shoot the Peoria Chiefs game. And, of course, this is before cell phones and everything. So, okay. And so I get on in the studio do a thing, and I said, Rick Mears shifts his gears, coming up tonight at 10. Then I run out, shoot the game, and about in the third inning, Rick Mears shifts his gears. And this is when the ABC affiliate, they replayed. It wasn't shown live, so all these people weren't watching. And so I set a land speed record from Minen Field to Creve Coeur, Illinois. And as I walk in to open the control room doors, Rick Mears shifts his gears, and the phones light up. I've been staying away from the radio all day because Rick Mears. And then, like, a director was, like, so sympathetic to me because he knew I was bumming about it. He said, oh, who cares what they think? Maybe, what if you would have said Mario Andretti eats spaghetti, you know? It's like, well, thanks for that. And so I did on the air, so I tried to make light of it. But I was, like, I felt like, you know, I ruined the day. Yeah. You know, that's the end of my broadcasting career. Yeah,
then the other thing, like, I get at, though, you said if you're showing that video of the kid throwing the interception or whatever, or something, maybe you've said, or maybe it comes across the wrong way, where have you ever had that kind of experience before? Mm-hmm. You know, I was thinking about that. This was a couple of years ago. I felt bad. We were broadcasting a local game here, and I had said something at the end of the broadcast, and I'm not going to tell you even who the coach was, but he was really upset about it. And I realized, initially, you know, in this business, I tell everybody has a slight little bit ego with the job they do when you're doing this. And I thought immediately my initial mechanism was, oh, how dare he?
Right.
You know,
right.
he knows this job and how mm-hmm. defensive. And then I thought about it. I'm like, you know what? Maybe he is right. And maybe sometimes it's better to kind of just take the high road
man
up and apologize. And I did. I really, mm-hmm. I said, hey, man, if I came across the wrong way, I apologize. And it's one of the best I've ever felt doing this job.
Gotcha.
And I said, hey, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that. You mm-hmm. you have a class program, whatever. So, I mean, what I tell people in this business is there's a lot of learning lessons.
Absolutely.
You know, on most days. And things like that, or just watching the game or stuff of that nature, you know, you're not doing your job in this profession unless you're kind of learning along the way, too.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I kind of approach it.
Yeah. You know, and it's kind of like some coaches, they don't want to be interviewed. You know, and like there was a local coach said, well, it's not about me, it's about the kids. And I would like, you know, just let me know when you want to talk on the air. And it developed this relationship of respect. And then I said, you know, coach, you're the head coach, you know, and you're the face of this program. And, you know, they want to hear what you have to say. And, it, you know, and I'm like, just know your audience. You don't have to talk about linebacker flow. You just got to know that these kids' moms are listening. Joey is such a good player and such a good kid. Did you know he has a 4.0 and he can really wing the ball? And that's it's 12-second soundbite. So that's something that's been opportunity for me to grow and also to celebrate those coaches to say, you know what, you are an influencer, and as the head coach, you know, use that opportunity. So that's something, you know, I guess I was really careful with, and I'm, you know, as I look at. We have this thing called three-dimensional coaching in FCA where it starts with the coach, and, you know, the first dimension is the fundamentals. Yeah, you got to know the X's and O's. You got to get your kids in shape. And the second is the psychology of sport. Why do we do what we do? Why do you show up on time? Why do you say that your equipment's not right, even though it is? You know, and you don't punish them with a first dimension. You don't go make them run 2 miles mm-hmm. because they're late. You make them man up and say, this is why, coach. And then they want to run through a wall for you. And then the third dimension is the heart. You know, why do you really coach? What's your journey? You know, and do you understand the influence you have? So to have that awareness, even as a broadcaster, I think that's really important. And if you get in a situation where you need to apologize, do it. You know, that's life. That's real life, you know. And, like, for me, as I look, like, there's sometimes I have regret about how many games we covered and how much. Because right now, you know, there's 15, 16-year-old kids, you know, that are being celebrated so much, you know, then all of a sudden they're not on TV every week anymore, too. And are we over-celebrating it at the same
time?
Yeah,
that's it. You know? No question.
Yeah. So there's something about the innocence of, like, when we were growing up, especially me, if your team's score got on TV, that was great. They might show highlights of one or two games, and even that was enough back then. So to be careful and temper that and balance things is really important, and to keep a perspective on what's really important. And as hard as it isn't what the final score is. It's important to want to win everything, but I like to give coaches permission not to go 14-0 in a football season, because you have these wonderful children in their lives, many of them whose parents are in love with their children, and some of them don't have that at all, that you are the parental figure. So it's okay, coach, you know, just get in their lives. And one of the things with like 3D coaching is you go spend a half hour in the home of every kid before the season starts. And it's like, I got 70 players. You got 8 assistant coaches too, you know. So relationship is what it's all about.
Well, and before we take a break here, you bring up a great point about the joy of interscholastic athletics. Mm-hmm. And nothing pains me more when you see that student athlete not enjoying it anymore. Mm-hmm. And for me, you know, that's what I'm concerned about, because I see a lot of it where, yeah, kids are playing, mm-hmm. but are they really enjoying interscholastic athletics? And we have this constant battle in this discussion about the off-season stuff.
Right.
I'm just talking about the summer stuff, but then the off-season stuff where another sport's going on and those seasons are overlapping. And I always look at, you know, growing up, you know, how for me, when you go kind of full circle, when you first are young and you start playing sports or just, you know, throwing the ball around or whatever, you're doing it Why? Because you enjoy
it. It's play.
You love it. Mm-hmm. But then, unfortunately, as we go along in life a little bit, as we keep playing, we lose the joy a little bit, right? But then when we get done, and like for me, this is kind of a full circle moment for me. I play like 50 and over softball now. And I know my ability's terrible now when you get older. But why do I do it? Because I enjoy it.
Exactly.
Yeah, because it's a social component of your life. Like when you first started playing, you just wanted to get out and play on the court, throw the ball around, whatever. And then we lose it a little bit in our most productive athletic years, I think, with just kind of the overkill. And then when we get done playing, we miss it a little bit and want to go back and play for the sole reason of enjoyment of it. Do you kind of see what I'm saying? Do you see that?
I do. And like one of my daughter, Kate, both of my daughters, you know, they were very talented and everything. And like Katie, especially, she had some opportunities to go play in college, some tennis or whatever, and run on a track team, you know. But she decided not to do that. She majored in nursing, so she knew she was going to be challenged. And I said, you know, it's going to be okay to go be an intramural superstar. You know, you're going to feed that competitive need, you know. And then, like, the other day I saw her, she was wearing all-university basketball champs, you know, from 2007, you know. So it was kind of like, that's okay. And, again, you know, with what travel ball is, you got to be careful what you say, I guess. But, like, for me personally, like, just even in the last 10 years, like, I teach our high school Sunday school, and I love it. But there are times, like, it's changed from, well, I'm going to occasionally have a game at 11 in the morning.
Oh, now it's every Sunday. That's me.
And it's not only games, it's practices, too. And that's something that can be avoided. You know, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So for the Christian parent out there, it's like, if you think your kid's got a shot, the college coach is going to find you. And I got news for you. You know, if they study and have reasonable grade point average, they're going to get more scholarship money that way too, you know. And let play be play. And then if, you know, the University of Wisconsin coach discovers you and you become an All-American, congratulations. Way to go.
That's happened one time in the 25 years I've been broadcasting. Exactly. All these kids. All right, yeah. We need to take a break here, but great to have Dan Pearson in studio with us. We'll have more on WRMJ and WRMJ.com in a moment. With